She had been managing her Hashimoto's for 4 years. She was on levothyroxine, her TSH was in range, and she had a good relationship with her endocrinologist, who she saw every 6 months and reviewed her dose, and who was satisfied with her management. But she was not satisfied. She was fatigued in a way that had become so constant, she'd stopped describing it as a symptom and started describing it as who she was. She'd gained 12 kilograms since her diagnosis, despite eating carefully. Her brain fog was, in her words, relentless. Her joint stiffness was worse in the mornings. She had started to wonder whether something else was developing, whether the Hashimoto's was being joined by another condition further along the autoimmune spectrum. In 4 years of clinical management, nobody had tested her fasting insulin. Nobody had assessed her for metabolic syndrome. Nobody had looked at her triglyceride to HDL ratio. Nobody had asked her about her energy patterns after she ate, her afternoon crashes, all the sweet cravings that she found almost impossible to resist from 3 in the afternoon onwards. When she came to work with me, we found that she had significant insulin resistance, almost certainly present for the majority of the time that she'd been living with her Hashimoto's. And it had never been named, never tested, never connected to the fatigue, the weight, the brain fog, or the progressive worsening of her antibody levels. Not once. This episode is about that connection. About what insulin resistance does to the thyroid, what it does to the immune system, why metabolic assessment is, in my view, non-negotiable in autoimmune and thyroid care, and what changes when it is finally addressed. Welcome to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner, autoimmune and thyroid specialist, author of Optimal You and founder of the Good Health Clinic. Last week, we laid out the full picture of insulin resistance, what it is, why standard testing misses it for years, and what it does across the brain, the hormones, the immune system, and sleep architecture as it progresses. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, you can jump back and listen to that anytime you like. Today, we're going to build directly on that. Because today I want to take the metabolic picture that we established last week and apply it to the clinical area I've specialized in throughout my career, autoimmunity and thyroid disease. These conditions are managed in the conventional model almost entirely through the immune or hormonal lens, immunosuppression, thyroid hormone replacement, monitoring of disease markers. And that management matters. We're not undermining it. But the metabolic picture, the insulin resistance, the visceral adiposity, the chronic inflammation, the metabolic immune axis is so consistently present in the patients I work with and so consistently underaddressed in their care that I consider it one of the most significant gaps in contemporary autoimmune and thyroid medicine. If you have a thyroid condition or an autoimmune diagnosis and you have never had your metabolic picture properly assessed, this episode is going to shift something for you. So I want to start with the mechanism, getting into the science, the specific biological pathway through which insulin resistance drives immune dysfunction. Because once you understand it, the clinical association between metabolic health and autoimmune disease stops looking like a coincidence and starts looking like an inevitability. The key structure is visceral adipose tissue, the fat that's deposited around the abdominal organs that accumulates as insulin resistance develops and as chronically elevated insulin promotes lipid storage in the hepatic and visceral compartments. Visceral fat is not metabolically inert. It is an active inflammatory endocrine organ. And in the context of immune function, its inflammatory output is profound. Visceral adipocytes overproduce pro-inflammatory cytokines, specifically TNF-alpha, interleukin-6, interleukin-1-beta, and more. These are not peripheral signals. TNF-alpha directly activates NF-kappa-B, the master transcription factor for inflammatory gene expression in immune cells, endothelial cells, and hepatocytes simultaneously. IL-6 drives the acute phase response and promotes the differentiation of T cells towards the pro-inflammatory Th17 phenotype rather than the regulatory Treg phenotype. This T17-Treg balance is absolutely central to understanding autoimmune disease. Regulatory T cells, so the Tregs, are the immune system's governors. Their job is to maintain tolerance, to prevent the immune system from attacking self-tissue. Th17 cells drive inflammation and tissue damage. In healthy immune regulation, the balance favors adequate Treg activity. In the chronic low-grade inflammatory environment produced by visceral adiposity and insulin resistance, that balance shifts towards Th17 dominance. So tolerance is compromised. The risk of autoimmune activation and the severity of established autoimmune diseases increases. And then there's a second mechanism, the adipokine imbalance. Adipose tissue produces two particularly important adipokines, leptin and adiponectin, whose ratio shifts significantly in insulin resistance and whose effects on immune function are clinically important. Leptin, which rises with increasing adiposity, is pro-inflammatory in its immune effects. It promotes Th1 immune responses, which is the aggressive arm of the adaptive immune system, and suppresses Treg function. It activates natural killer cells and macrophages. In the context of autoimmunity, elevated leptin is associated with increased disease activity, and this has been studied across illnesses like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and multiple sclerosis. Adiponectin, conversely, is anti-inflammatory. It reduces TNF-alpha and interleukin-6 production. It promotes macrophage differentiation towards the anti-inflammatory M2 phenotype, and it supports Treg function. Adiponectin levels fall as visceral adiposity increases. In insulin-resistant individuals, adiponectin is typically significantly reduced, removing one of the body's primary endogenous anti-inflammatory signals at precisely the time when inflammatory load is rising. What this means practically is that a patient with insulin resistance and visceral adiposity is living in a chronic pro-inflammatory immune dysregulating state. Elevated TNF-alpha, elevated IL-6, Th17, Treg imbalance, elevated leptin, reduced adiponectin, that is continuously activating and destabilizing the immune system. Layered onto a genetic predisposition to autoimmunity, this metabolic environment is not a background factor, it is an active driver. Managing the autoimmune condition without addressing the metabolic environment is treating the fire without addressing the accelerant. So now I want to move to the thyroid specifically, because the relationship between insulin resistance and thyroid function is one of the most clinically significant connections in my practice, and one of the most consistently overlooked. So first we need to look at the T4 to T3 conversion and why that matters. Thyroid hormone is produced by the thyroid gland primarily as thyroxine, T4, which is the inactive hormone. To become biologically active, T4 must be converted to T3, the active form, that binds to thyroid hormone receptors in every cell of the body, and then drives metabolic rate, thermogenesis, protein synthesis, and cellular energy production. This conversion is carried out by deiodinase enzymes, primarily types 1 and type 2, in the liver, kidneys, gut, and peripheral tissues. And it is exquisitely sensitive to the metabolic environment. Insulin resistance, chronic inflammation, elevated cortisol, and nutrient deficiencies, particularly in things like selenium and zinc, all impair the deiodinase activity and reduce that T4 to T3 conversion efficiency. This is the mechanism behind one of the most common clinical patterns I see. Normal TSH, normal T4, told everything is fine. But when we dig deeper, we found low or low normal range for free T3. The thyroid is producing T4 adequately. The pituitary is satisfied because the TSH is in range, but the conversion of that T4 to active T3 is impaired, and the patient has every symptom of hyperthyroidism: fatigue, cold intolerance, brain fog, weight gain, hair thinning, constipation, all with normal results that lead to no treatment and no explanation. In insulin-resistant patients, this pattern is particularly prevalent. The chronic inflammatory environment impairs hepatic deiodinase function. The elevated cortisol, a feature of the insulin-resistant metabolic state, further impairs T4 to T3 conversion and promotes the conversion of T4 to reverse T3 instead. And that's the inactive form that competes with T3 for receptor binding and actively blocks thyroid hormone action at a cellular level. And then there's a second, less well-known connection: the direct effect of insulin signaling on TSH secretion. So research, including a large cross-sectional work, has confirmed a positive association between fasting insulin, HOMA-IR, and TSH across populations without thyroid disease. The mechanism appears to involve insulin's role in pituitary function and the effect of chronic low-grade inflammation on the hypothalamic pituitary signaling. Now, this is research that is coming through, and we're getting more and more of this coming through. The clinical implication is that a patient with insulin resistance and a TSH of, let's say, 3.2 may be experiencing the combined effect of a genuinely suboptimal thyroid axis and a metabolic environment that is making it worse. Treating the thyroid with levothyroxine without addressing the insulin resistance is addressing the output while leaving that driver in place. Beyond the metabolic impairment of thyroid hormone dynamics, there is also a direct association between insulin resistance and the antibody-mediated thyroid disruption that defines Hashimoto's. Multiple studies have found elevated thyroid peroxidase antibody titers in insulin-resistant individuals compared to insulin-sensitive controls. And this is independent of BMI. So we really are just looking at that insulin resistance at this point. The mechanism circles back to the Th17-Treg imbalance. The same metabolic inflammation that dysregulates immune tolerance generally appears to accelerate thyroid-specific autoimmune activity specifically. The practical summary of this part is that insulin resistance impairs T4 to T3 conversion through inflammation-mediated deiodinase suppression and cortisol-driven reverse T3 elevation. It shifts TSH upwards even within reference range, and it actively promotes the thyroid autoimmunity that drives Hashimoto's progression. A patient can be on optimal levothyroxine replacement and still not feel well if the metabolic picture is not addressed. The conversion problem and the antibody activity will persist regardless of dose. So let's take a little bit more of a look at Hashimoto's and why metabolic assessment really is non-negotiable in these patients. Hashimoto's thyroiditis is the most common autoimmune condition in the world, affecting an estimated 5% of the global population. Women are affected at a ratio of approximately 7-1, roughly. It's the primary cause of hyperthyroidism in the developed world. And in my clinical experience, it's one of the conditions most consistently and consequentially undertreated. Not because the thyroid hormone replacement isn't managed, but because other things are not addressed. So the metabolic and the immune substrate that is driving the condition is almost never assessed. So let me describe the typical picture when a Hashimoto's patient comes to me who has been under conventional endocrine care for some time. TSH has been managed to within range. Free T4 is measured and is typically mid-range, maybe a little bit above that. Free T3 generally is not tested. Reverse T3 is not tested. TPO antibody levels were maybe measured for the diagnosis, potentially maybe once subsequently, but not ever tested after that again. And nobody has discussed what drives the antibody progression or what might reduce it. Metabolic markers have not been addressed beyond the standard cholesterol and glucose. Gut health has not been discussed. Stress physiology has not been addressed. Nutrient status has not been tested. The patient, meanwhile, is still fatigued, still brain fogged, still struggling with weight, still cold, still losing hair. And the levothyroxine has maybe helped somewhat, or maybe started to help initially and then kind of plateaued. But it's not helped to the degree that you were promised or to the degree that you need to function well. In my assessment of these patients, I consistently find significant insulin resistance. The conversion problem that we've already discussed, the elevated reverse T3, the persistently high TPO antibodies with no downward trend, gut dysbiosis. Relevant because approximately 20% of thyroid hormone conversion occurs in the gut, and because gut inflammation contributes to the systemic inflammatory load driving antibody production, selenium deficiency, which impairs both deiodinase function and the glutathione peroxidase activity that protects your thyroid cells from oxidative damage. There's quite often vitamin D insufficiency, which is directly immunomodulatory. That is associated with higher TPO antibody titers as well. What I want to emphasize here is that TPO antibody titers are not fixed. They are not simply a diagnostic marker that confirms the diagnosis and then remains irrelevant. They're a measure of ongoing autoimmune activity against thyroid tissue. Reducing those antibody levels over time means reducing the rate at which thyroid tissue is being destroyed, preserving function, slowing progression, and in some cases, achieving genuine disease remission. The interventions that move antibody levels are primarily metabolic and nutritional. Selenium, vitamin D, gut repair, gluten-free dietary trial, stress physiology support, and critically, the insulin resistance piece. Because the chronic pro-inflammatory Th17 dominant immune environment produced by insulin resistance and visceral adiposity is one of the most significant drivers of continued antibody production. You cannot meaningfully reduce Hashimoto's antibodies in a patient without checking and then addressing, if necessary, insulin resistance. The immune environment just will not allow it. The metabolic autoimmune connection is not just specific to Hashimoto's either. It runs through the full spectrum of autoimmune conditions. And the evidence base has grown substantially over the past two decades. So let's have a look at some of the other conditions where this plays a part. So rheumatoid arthritis. RA patients have approximately twice the cardiovascular risk of the general population, driven primarily by the chronic inflammation of the disease rather than by conventional cardiovascular risk factors. Insulin resistance is both more prevalent in RA patients than in matched controls and is positively associated with disease activity score. The TNF-alpha that drives joint inflammation in RA is the same cytokine that drives hepatic insulin resistance, the same NF-kappa B pathway that visceral adiposity activates. The clinical demonstration of this connection is compelling. Anti-TNF biologics, disease-modifying drugs that reduce TNF-alpha, improve insulin sensitivity as a secondary effect. And this is not incidental. It is a mechanistic demonstration that inflammatory activity and metabolic function are directly linked. Conversely, improving insulin sensitivity through dietary and lifestyle intervention reduces circulating TNF-alpha and IL-6, one mechanism through metabolic improvement that can reduce RA disease activity independently of medication. So then we have lupus. Lupus presents one of the most complex metabolic autoimmune pictures in clinical medicine. Lupus patients have a cardiovascular event risk up to 50 times higher than age-matched controls in some cohort studies that we're seeing come through. And this is not fully explained by traditional cardiovascular risk factors or by corticosteroid use, which is in itself worsening of insulin resistance. The disease's own inflammatory biology, driven by interferon alpha signaling and immune complex mediated vascular inflammation, is the primary driver. Insulin resistance is significantly more prevalent in lupus patients than in controls and is associated with higher disease activity, greater organ damage as a result, and worse quality of life. Hydroxychloroquine, one of the primary medications used in lupus management, has a well-documented insulin sensitizing effect that is considered one mechanism of its beneficial disease-modifying action. This is mechanistic evidence that metabolic improvement is a legitimate and pharmacologically validated therapeutic target in lupus. So again, working on this alongside medications from a nutrition and a lifestyle standpoint is only going to be beneficial. Another condition that we can look at is psoriasis or psoriatic arthritis. Metabolic syndrome is significantly more prevalent in psoriasis patients than in the general population. A metabolic status is one of the strongest predictors of psoriasis severity and treatment response. The skin inflammation of psoriasis and the systemic metabolic dysfunction are driven by the same inflammatory mediators, TNF-alpha, IL-17, IL-23. Treating the skin without addressing the metabolic substrate consistently produces partial and unstable results. In my clinical practice, psoriasis patients who address their insulin resistance alongside their dermatological management consistently achieve better outcomes. Fewer and less severe flares, a better response to topical treatments, and in some cases, significant improvement in skin involvement that dermatological management alone has not been able to achieve. And this is not about not using the medication, it's about putting things alongside your conventional treatments. The common thread across things like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, psoriasis, multiple sclerosis, Hashimoto's, and that broader autoimmune spectrum is that the pattern holds. Insulin resistance increases inflammatory cytokine production. It shifts that Th17 Treg balance toward immunogenic dysregulation, impairs the regulatory mechanisms that prevent self-tissue attack, and worsens disease activity. Addressing the metabolic picture is not alternative medicine. It is mechanistic, evidence-based immunology applied to a clinical context where it is currently just being underutilized. So let me close the clinical content of this episode by describing what a joined-up functional medicine assessment of an autoimmune or thyroid patient actually looks like. Because one of the barriers to this kind of care is that patients don't know what to ask for or what to expect. When someone comes to me with a thyroid or autoimmune condition, whether newly diagnosed or been managing it for years, the assessment covers four layers. The first thing is the metabolic picture. So we're going to do a full metabolic approach with full markers. We can look at things like fasting insulin, your HOMAIR, fasting glucose, HbA1c, triglyceride to HDL ratio, uric acid, that's an independent marker of insulin resistance, and fructose metabolic load that's often overlooked. We can look at liver enzymes, which frequently reflect that hepatic insulin resistance, and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease as well before it's clinically apparent. We can look at ApoB or advanced lipid assessment where available, because in insulin resistance, total LDL can be normal while the particle composition may not be. And this is something that is missed in the standard lipid testing. We're also going to look at that full thyroid axis. So TSH within functional range. We're going to look at free T4, free T3. We may look at reverse T3. And that's because we want to look at the free T3, the active hormone, to see what's happening with that conversion. This is one of the most clinically informative calculations in thyroid medicine. The reverse T3, because in metabolically stressed patients, that elevated reverse T3 frequently can explain ongoing symptoms that a normal T4 and TSH cannot. We're also going to look at those antibodies, so the TPO and TG antibodies. They're not merely diagnostic tools. We're going to look at them as measures of disease activity and progression that should be trended over time. We can also look at inflammatory and immune markers, so high sensitivity CRP for that systemic inflammatory load, homocysteine, relevant both as a cardiovascular risk marker and also as an indicator of B vitamin status and methylation, a pathway that's really important in that immune regulation and increasingly recognized in autoimmune disease. We're going to look at vitamin D. We really want that level on the higher end of normal in autoimmune patients. And quite often we see it low, almost universally actually in autoimmune patients, we see it as low. And its correction can be one of the most impactful single things that we do. Ferritin as well for iron status as an acute phase reactant that reflects inflammatory activity. Zinc and selenium as well if we're looking at that thyroid specific nutritional support. And then we're going to look at the gut. So stool analysis for microbiome composition and gut inflammation markers, calprotectin and lactoferrin to have a look at that intestinal immune activation, maybe zonulin or LPS antibodies as markers of intestinal permeability where it's clinically indicated, a comprehensive dietary and digestive history to identify the gut-specific drivers of the inflammatory picture. When we look at all of these things assessed together, they give a genuinely complete picture of the metabolic, immune, thyroid, and gut drivers in a way that no single system assessment can. The interventions that emerge, so dietary change, insulin sensitivity support, thyroid nutrient repletion, gut repair, immune modulation, all work together in a way that single system interventions do not, because they're addressing the same underlying biology from multiple directions simultaneously. The patient that we talked about at the very top of this episode had been managing her Hashimoto's for 4 years. She had a really great doctor and she was really being cared for in the conventional sense. But nobody had asked the metabolic question. Nobody had connected her insulin resistance to her conversion problem, to her antibody activity, to the fatigue, the weight, the brain fog. Those were experienced as separate, unexplained frustrations, but they weren't separate. They were one metabolic immune picture with multiple expressions. When we addressed her insulin resistance with dietary change, targeted nutritional support, the stress physiology piece, alongside optimizing her hormone replacement therapy with her doctor and addressing that gut picture, she felt better within 8 weeks in a way that 4 years of just levothyroxine management alone hadn't been able to achieve for her. Her free T3 improved, her reverse T3 fell, her TPO antibodies, which had been persistently elevated, began to, for the first time, decline. That is what a joined up picture in functional medicine actually looks like. So if you have thyroid or an autoimmune condition, has anyone ever assessed your metabolic picture? Has anyone even talked to you about your metabolic picture? And I don't just mean a cholesterol or glucose test. I mean a full metabolic assessment. If the answer is no, that is a gap that is worth addressing. Not instead of your conventional care, but alongside it. Because the metabolic substrate is not a separate story. It is the foundation of the story that you are already in. Everything we've covered today, the thyroid axis, the autoimmune metabolic connection, the assessment framework, is all part of the clinical approach that I take with every patient who comes through the Good Health Clinic. If you want to understand your own picture at this level of depth, then a really great place to start is on our website at goodhealth.uk. That's G-O-O-D-E health.uk. You can book a free inquiry call with us straight from the homepage. And the 7-day reset that we have provides the dietary and nutritional foundation for the metabolic work we've been discussing. Blood sugar stabilization, inflammatory load reduction, insulin sensitivity support. And at £7.99, it's a great place to start. We'll link all of this in the show notes below. Next week, we're going to go into chronic inflammation a little bit more as a whole body phenomenon. What it is, what drives it, what its consequences are across every system. On why it's a unifying thread that connects everything that we've discussed so far in the last two episodes. You've been listening to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner, autoimmune and thyroid specialist, and author of Optimal You. You can find me at goodhealth.uk, that's G-O-O-D-E health.uk, on Instagram at Good Health Clinic, G-O-O-D-E Health Clinic, and wherever you get your podcasts. Show notes and all the resources are linked below. I'll see you next week.